Hey everybody, it's your friend Kent C. Dodds, and I am here joined by my friend. Oh, Emma, I actually forgot to ask you how you say your last name.
You don't want to give it a go? Come on.
Okay, it's Emma
Oh,
Wedekind.
that's how I would have said it before I moved here, but it's actually Vatikant.
Wedekind. Okay.
Yeah, it's very German. It's very German.
I should have known. I knew that German W's were pronounced like a V, but my bad.
Well, now you know, and now you can spread the word.
Okay, well, we'll do that in this podcast. Everybody listening, it's a Vedicant. So cool. So if you haven't heard of Emma, she's just a fabulous person. I'm actually going to give her an opportunity to introduce herself. So Emma, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? And you don't have to specifically talk about what you're doing technologically wise or career wise. You can tell us a little bit about your interests or whatever you want to say about yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, cool. So hi, I'm Emma, and thank you for having me on. I appreciate it. So yeah, I'm a UX engineer currently, which is a fun new role that's kind of like a hybrid between an engineer and a designer. Who am I as a person though? Let's say I'm an American who moved to Germany about a year ago, which is a lot of fun. I am a proud mother to two cats. They're horribly behaved, but I still love them. And I thoroughly enjoy reading as many books as I can possibly digest. So, yeah.
Nice. I'll try to get my fantasy novel finished for you.
Yeah, I can't wait to read it. I'm like chomping at the bit for this.
Oh, that's so nice. It makes me feel good. It encourages me to get that finished. Cool. So Emma, there are like a silly amount of things that we could talk about together. You have a very active dev.2 blog, and your Twitter is just on fire all the time. But I wanted to talk a little bit about this mentoring app that you are working on. I think it's a really cool idea, and mentoring is actually a subject that I have mixed feelings about. And so I'd love to chat with you about that a little bit. Along with the fact that this is a open source app and all of the nuances that come with managing open source projects. So why don't you tell us about this project and like kind of the why behind the project and what you're trying to accomplish here.
Sure. So this actually started several years ago when I was working at IBM as an engineer. And I was working on a design team. I was working with the IBM Quantum design team as the only front-end developer on the team. And I had so many questions for like technology stack and all of that. I was still, I would say, pretty new. I had studied Java all throughout college. So like switching to a team where now I had the authority to kind of choose my tech stack. And I chose Vue.js, which was so much fun. But I was so new to the industry. I had so many questions and I had no one to ask. Because as a developer on a design team, like you don't have anyone you work with in person day to day. And so I had this idea of like, well, we should have a mentorship program. And so we actually had held a like a workshop with a bunch or a bunch like several women like executives within IBM, and we had a full day workshop, and like we had some tangible outputs, and I had a small team put together. It was like a cross-functional team. We had some designers, and Jason Langsdorff was actually there. He was there from the beginning. He was trying to help.
Love
And
that guy.
unfortunately, like, yeah, he's so great. But unfortunately, it just wasn't the right timing. So I kind of, it went dormant for a few years. And then in September of last year, I was in the Berlin airport, and I don't know, I think I maybe had 1,000 followers if I was lucky at that point. And I was like, it seems like there's a real need for mentorship, and maybe this is the time. Like, I don't know. I just felt like it was the time. So I tweeted out and was like, hey, is anyone interested in creating an open source mentorship app? And like the response was overwhelmingly positive. So I bought a domain name, and you would not believe how hard it is to find domain names that aren't taken. So I bought codingcoach.io, and I was a little on the fence about it because coach can kind of mean like several things, right? But I was like, you know what? It still means, kind of someone who guides you to a certain extent. So I bought the domain name, I opened a Slack organization, and people just started flowing in. And it was a little overwhelming because I had no idea how to manage anything. I had never like managed something to this extent before. And originally I thought I was going to develop it. And Kai, my husband, was like, you can't develop this app because if you develop it, it's going to fail because no one will be pushing this project along. So I was like, all right, you're right. So And the other thing I had to get used to was delegating. I'm a control freak, believe it or not. And so I to find talented developers that I could trust to groom like the backlog and GitHub and to kind of push this thing forward and choose the tech stack. It was kind of nerve-wracking, but I found two really great front-end engineers who one of them, Chris Fell, works for InVision as a senior dev, and the other one, Mosh, who was the force behind this alpha site that you see up today, mentors.codeandcoach.io. He works at Wix as an engineer. So I got super lucky with on the front end side. And I have a great back end guy too. I don't know as much about back end, so I can't praise it to the same extent.
But it works, and
Jagadish, if
so
you're out there.
that's what you're saying.
Yeah. So yeah, I think it's grown. We have over 2,000 people in our Slack org, and we have, I don't know, like over 7,000 followers now on Twitter. And for something that's just as simple as like a database that's pulling in data from a package JSON file for a first release, I think that's pretty incredible. So yeah,
It's pulling data from a package JSON file. What is
it
that?
is. So we have a CLI tool right now. So like the first iterations, you had to actually like clone the repository and add your data in, and it had to be like the same exact structure, of course, or like our code would fail on it. And you'd open like a pull request, and there would be like a ton of merge conflicts. But they created a CLI tool where now you just say like add mentor or create new mentor, I can't remember, and it guides you through the information that you need to add, and it's super easy now. So yeah, but it's all just sitting in a package JSON for right now. There's no back end, so.
Okay, cool. Interesting. So if I were to go to the coding coach project on GitHub, I would just see this massive package JSON file in there.
Yeah, it's not optimal. And we're in the process of, I think the word is obfuscating all of our email addresses. Yeah, I don't even like, I don't know how people that don't speak native English can pronounce it because I can't pronounce it. Yeah, we're in the process of like building a fully fledged site, but I think the short term goal was like, hey, we need something out there, right? Like just get something out there that people can reference. And in the meantime, we'll build our like full stack application where we'll have a proper database and whatnot. So.
Yeah, that's great. The reason that I asked that was just to call out the fact that if you had waited until you had like the perfect solution, then you wouldn't have something shipped already. And like, I mean, maybe it's not optimal, but it's shipped, and shipped is way better than not shipped most of the time. And so I think that's an important good takeaway for people is to get as close to sh or yeah ship as fast as possible, and then you can iterate to a better solution.
There's like two pieces to that though, because I personally am a proponent of like getting something out, because defining done is like nearly impossible, right? Nothing is ever fully done. So at some point you just have to be like, okay, these are the MVP or like the minimum viable product, like just ship it. So there's that. And then I was reading this book, I think it was called The Originals, and they discussed the fact that occasionally with products you see, they're not always first to market, right? And the most successful aren't necessarily first to market, which I found very interesting, because you would assume that whoever's first, wins the whole thing. But it's kind of a balance of like making sure that it's completed enough to provide enough value to the community, but not waiting too long.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, and that makes me think of what happens if you ship too early and it's a bit of a disaster, right? And then people are going to say, "Oh, I used that last year and it was just not good, so I'm not going to try again." That makes me think of the Jest testing framework, which a couple of years ago was like, ooh, really bad. Like everybody, it was kind of a joke, but then it over time, they iterated to just the most amazing testing platform, and then they were able to win people back. So, yeah, there is a delicate balance there, I think.
I feel like I've
So,
only ever seen one product though, like actually ship something that was like utterly beautiful its first go around. I think it's called CV Compiler. It's like the coolest site. They have an amazing site. Go check it out. Basically, like you upload your resume, and it like uses artificial intelligence to like deduce how, effective of a resume it will be. And their first launch, I was like, oh my God, they built that, and that's their first release. Like, that's incredible. But yeah, normally you would see like all the products, if you go back in time to like Google and Twitter and Facebook, like the first releases, I mean, they weren't beautiful. So don't push yourself too hard.
So, I want to talk a little bit about mentoring, just like the topic in general. I was wondering, when you created the Slack group and released everything, my impression would be that like 99% of the people who joined would be people seeking a mentor, and then you'd have, you know, one mentor for 200 people or something. So how has that played out in reality? And what do you think, like, if that is a problem, what do you think a good solution to that problem could be?
Yeah, so I think that's a safe assumption that like the majority of people coming to this site are looking for a mentor. But I was pleasantly surprised by how many people avidly wanted to sign up, because I think mentorship is such a positive thing that people want to promote the fact that they are a mentor. Selfishly, I think it looks good, right? To say I'm a mentor to people. But yeah, I think there are so many good-hearted people in the community that they want to help people. They want to help beginners, because we all know how it feels to be a beginner. I will say, as much as I do love mentorship, it's kind of a double-edged sword in a sense, because I get a lot of messages, and I know a lot of people in the community get a lot of messages saying, hey, will you be my mentor? And that's it. That's like the end of the message.
Yep.
And I think part of that is they don't know how to start this conversation. And so that's why I wanted to create these mentorship guidelines. It's on Google Drive for anyone to go look at. But how do you start this conversation? Because just sending a message saying, hey, will you be my mentor? That doesn't tell the mentor anything about yourself. Like, who are you? You know, what are your career goals? What kind of things are you looking for to get out of this mentorship, right? Is this a career mentorship? Is it a technical mentorship? And in all honesty, these mentors are giving up their free time. So this platform is free. That was one of the things I really had wanted, because many people can't afford, you know, a high quality mentor in terms of money. And so these mentors are giving up their free time. And what that means is, as a mentee, you need to do the bulk of the work. So have a clear plan, have 3 to 5 tangible goals laid out that you can send them and be like, these are the things I want to work on. And at that point, that's where you can begin to like sketch out like a learning plan. And then you can measure your results against those. But if you just come to someone and say, hey, will you be my mentor? It doesn't really tell them anything about yourself. So you just got to make sure that you are the one doing the majority of the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sometimes, like, so this happens to me a lot. I get a request to be a mentor about once a week, and it's pretty exhausting, honestly, as an individual responding to these people. And I pretty much always say no, because I don't have the bandwidth for it. But and I feel bad about that. But sometimes I'll get the, you know, one liner, will you be my mentor? Other times I'll get this giant story of like life story, and I never have time to read that. So what would you say is I guess you have the mentorship guidelines, and we'll link over to that, but if you can quickly describe some good like specific tips about the type of message that somebody would send to someone.
Yeah, so on our platform, we want to make sure that our mentors are able to I don't know what the right word is, like politely decline, right? Because that's kind of a weird situation. You don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. Mm-hmm. You don't want to like shut them down and make them feel bad about themselves, because they haven't done anything wrong. It's just simply that the more busy you are, the less capacity you have. And so one thing we'll be doing is adding like capacity indicators to our cards, like our mentor cards. So you can quickly see like, hey, this person's like full, they don't have any time, so I won't even bother reaching out to them right now. So that's one phase of it. But if you're a mentor and you receive a message and it says, you know, will you be my mentor? And you just don't have the capacity, or maybe this happened to me today. There was a woman who was looking for a backend, like a Node.js mentor. And I'm like, hey, like, I'm sorry, I'm just not the right person for you. Like, I don't have the skill set to be able to effectively mentor you. And in those instances, you know, you can be honest if you want. Say, hey, I'm unfortunately just too busy. I'm happy to pass your name along to other people I know who might be looking to take on new mentees. Or you could say, you know, my skill set isn't the right fit, and I want you to be successful, right? But you know, just it's about, I think, being authentic and being honest about the reason. You don't have to give, you know, your whole life story or all of these excuses necessarily, but just make them feel like, you know, there is someone out there who will mentor them and who is a better fit, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's good. Like, so We've talked a little bit about some of the things that the mentees can do, or people looking for mentors. Well, why would an experienced engineer be interested, or even an inexperienced engineer, why would a person be interested in mentoring other people? Like from the outside looking in, you might think, well, I mean, you know, this is not serving me in any way. Like what do I stand to gain by donating my time to mentor other people? So what should motivate people to desire to be the mentor?
Mm-hmm. There are a couple of things. So one is you just genuinely want to make the community a better place. And you know, by shaping the future of the engineers that are joining this industry, I think that's one way to do so. Secondly is there are a lot of professionals who need to be a mentor in order to get a promotion. When I was at IBM, once you hit a certain level or a certain tier, you needed to be a mentor to someone and prove that you had been a mentor to actually get a promotion. Hmm. So it's kind of twofold, right? And I think we need to stop thinking. Yes, I would say in general, there's a hierarchy. Like a mentor is typically the person like instilling knowledge in the mentee. But you should remember that it's a two-sided relationship. So actually the mentor can gain knowledge from the mentee as well, right? And perhaps I'm a mentor and I'm looking to get into teaching, right? So like, I love writing blogs. I love creating courses. I like to teach, and mentorship is one way for me to kind of, like shape my skill set and figure out where I can improve as well as a teacher.
Mm. Yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. I feel like, when people ask me to be a mentor, neither one of us have any idea what that even looks like. And half the time they say that, like, I don't know what I want you to do or what you want me to do, but I just want you to be my mentor. And it seems kind of like ambiguous, but I feel like the most successful mentorship relationships that I've been involved in are the ones where you don't even really think of the relationship as an official mentor-mentee type of situation, but it's more just, you know, on occasion I, you know, do something and receive feedback. Most of my experience being mentored has been I contribute to an open source project and they give me feedback on my contribution. And that is like a really strong mentorship situation there. And that's actually something that I've started doing when people ask me to be a mentor. I say, well, I have these issues open on some projects. You go ahead and try to implement those things and I'll give you feedback on your code. And then not only is it serving me as a mentor because I get those things finished, but it also serves the mentee because they get that feedback on their code. Have you seen that work in your situations? Does that seem like a pretty good type of mentor-mentee relationship there?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you had mentioned earlier, I get a lot of messages asking, you know, if I can be someone's mentor. And my typical answer is I am happy to answer any questions that you have, any direct questions, or give you advice or give you resources. But like, I just don't have the time to like get on Zoom all the time and like have 30-minute conversations. Mm-hmm. So there's this kind of like asynchronous type of mentorship where like, if I have a question that I just cannot find the answer to, like I can ask this person. Right. So that's a nice, easier type of mentorship. When I was at IBM, I did have a mentor. He now works at Google, and he was someone that I had looked up to in the industry. And so I asked him if he would be my mentor, and he said, I'm not really sure where to go from here. I think our first meeting was him kind of giving me like a fake technical interview and seeing like where my gaps were. So like if I was interviewing with him, like where would I need to improve? So that was one aspect of it. And then the second was taking a project. So I needed to rebuild my portfolio. So he was like, all right, so you want to build your portfolio. These are the technologies you want to learn. I think I was learning Vue at the time. And he said, all right, so each week you're going to have like a set of like checklist items that you need to meet. And what we'll do is we'll review your code in person together. And by the end of it, I had a fully fledged portfolio. So like I got something out of it, and we had like tangible items to go through each week or every other week. So I think those types of mentorships are honestly the best when there's something tangible that you can look at together. And as the mentor, you can walk them through like, okay, well, like this works, right? Like, but it's maybe you can optimize performance a little bit by not doing an nested for loop or something, you know, similar like that. I think those are the best types, right? Unless you're looking for just general career advice. If you're looking for a technical mentorship, I think hands-on is definitely the way to go.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned the that this mentor helped you with the interview process. And we talked about earlier that you kind of wanted to talk about that a little bit. What are some things, and often like these mentees, they're kind of hoping to land a job through this relationship, or like getting some feedback and stuff. So what are some things that people can do to, prepare for a job interview and, like to eventually land a job where they want to go?
Yeah. So, every time I have a technical interview, I cry a little bit on the inside because as outgoing and like confident as I seem, like I still have imposter syndrome, and I think everyone, most people will to some extent. I will say like, there's kind of this debate of like, well, do you need computer science principles in web development specifically? I don't want to fully get into that now, but I think like just as a caveat, like I have a computer science degree and I don't feel like it put me in an advantage in terms of technical interviews because like I didn't digest the information during my degree. And so every time I have an interview, it makes me extremely nervous. And I spend so many hours preparing. I have written a blog post called Decoding the Frontend Technical Interview, I believe it's called, which kind of lays out the general process, right? I think the majority of us are terrified of the technical whiteboarding interviews, and that's kind of where we trip up. But we also need to remember that, like, the HR interview and like the cultural fit interview are just as important, right? Because we kind of forget that as engineers, we need to work on our soft skills. So yeah, I mean, from like a technical side, like I don't know what kind of tools that you use to prepare, like, but I personally love HackerRank. I think for algorithmic coding, I think it gives me great ideas to practice with. Although, like I said, like that's hard to get feedback on. So this would maybe be a great activity if you had a mentor that you could take to them and be like, hey, this is my solution. Like, how can I optimize it? Or like, what would you say if a candidate submitted this? But yeah, I think as a whole, like, I feel like the industry is a little bit flawed in the sense that like, you can apply to 10 jobs and you'll have 10 completely different interviews. You don't really know exactly what to prep for. But like, if you like, Kent, if you were preparing for an interview, what would you like, how would you study?
Oh, I remember like, especially early on in my career, I was going through all the like Hack the Interview, you know, books and blog posts and everything that I could think of. And when I interviewed it at Facebook and interviewed at PayPal, I was really surprised to find that the interviews were very practical. And so I think unless you're going to Google, I think a lot of companies are starting to come around and realize that, hey, these trick questions are just not helping us hire the kind of talent that we're looking for. And so I recommend to people to study the things that they do on the day-to-day job, just like, so maybe solidify the fundamentals a little bit, think about the abstractions you're using and try to figure out how those things work, so that you can talk about them intelligently. Yeah, really, like, especially for front-end engineers, really solidify your understanding of the fundamentals of HTML, CSS, and JavaScript. And then, yeah, go into the interview, as confidently as you possibly can, and don't feel like you, remember that you are also interviewing them, and keeping that in mind can maybe help relieve a little bit of the nerves because you're not the only one on trial, in this situation.
It's so true. It's like, I see this a lot too with recruiters where like, I'll notice people will bend over backwards to accommodate recruiter, especially if they're from like one of the Fortune 500 companies, right? Mm-hmm. Like the recruiter will reach out and be like, hey, we want to interview you. And, do you have time at like 6 a.m. or like 10 at night? And like most people will say yes, because there's like a stigma around these big companies and like you want to impress them, but they're also you're interviewing them too, right? Like they want you, you're talented. They wouldn't be interviewing you if you weren't. So we need to be more like forthright with being confident about those kind of things.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're coming down close on our time, but one thing that I wanted to talk with you about as well is, so like kind of back to the mentoring aspect as a mentor, the reason that I don't have as much bandwidth to be a one-on-one mentor for people is because I spend my, when I was at a company, it was my free time. Now I'm at my own company, so all time is company time, I guess. I don't know, but I spend that time not actually that I'm not actually working, making content, producing, you know, videos or blog posts or this podcast, whatever, to, you know, give out to the world. And that's kind of how I see myself as a mentor now, where I'm mentoring anybody who is consuming my content, and I increase the value of the impact by creating that content that's consumed by a lot of people. But you do this yourself quite a bit. What are your thoughts around creating content as a form of mentorship?
I have never actually seen myself and the content I produce as mentorship. And it's so funny because you're not the first person to tell me that that's like mass mentorship, but it makes sense, right? I don't make, this sounds terrible and I don't want this to come off terribly, but I don't make content for other people. I make content for myself that I would want to read or ingest. And it just happens. I feel like that's the best way to produce content, because if you're interested in it and you want to read it and you can learn from it, then more people can do that than just you. When you try to produce content for people, I feel like you can get bogged down with like, you know, producing content that you're not passionate about. And at that point, like if you're not passionate about it, like your audience will be able to tell. So I think producing content that you're passionate about is a great form of mentorship. It's a lot easier to reach many people. I struggle though personally with like prioritizing my time and not getting overextended. And this has happened to me recently. And I've realized that I can focus on 2, max 3 things at a time, whether that's like egghead courses or creating like conference talks or writing blogs. So I would say, you know, if you're nervous about producing content, just go for it. Just make sure that you enjoy the content that you produce.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's such like fantastic advice. And if you're not interested in it, then you're probably not going to produce super useful content for other people anyway. That lack of interest will show in the, I don't know, the value of the content that you create. So I think that's a super great advice. So what would you say to people who are like, well, yeah, sure, I'm interested in writing blog posts, or I want to make a screencast, but you know, a bunch of people have already done this like before. Like I don't even know how many blog posts there are about how this works in JavaScript, but there are probably many. And so especially people who are kind of beginners, they're like, I mean, I'm not inventing any new patterns, or they're like, there's certainly nothing new under the sun, you know, that other people haven't seen that I can create. So I guess I'll just wait until I'm a super experienced engineer making up new programming languages or something before I start producing content. What would you say to people with that fear?
Firstly, you don't need to be an expert in something. I started blogging. I still don't feel like I fully understand the scope of everything that I write about. But just, you know, just start, whether that's writing, blogging, or making videos, or whatever medium is. Secondly, you know, yes, there might be a plethora of information out there, but no content is bad content unless it's just like blatantly wrong. Like don't go, you know, preaching that you should just use divs for everything, because like, you know, the standards say otherwise. But like if you're producing content that's like legitimate and you enjoy it, like go for it. And you know, if it reaches one person and it helps one person, then you have instilled value into the community. So it doesn't matter how many blog posts there are, you have a unique vantage point. And you know, if you enjoy doing it, go for it.
Absolutely. And I would say that even if that one person that it reaches is yourself in the future, right, then that like it almost acts as a journal in that sense. But often it's going to reach more people. And in fact, especially if you're talking about like a meetup talk or something like that, then all of the people in the room, like many of them may not have read that particular blog post that inspired you to create this meetup talk. And so you're able to reach those people in a way that that blog post wasn't able to reach them. So there's definitely opportunity there. And so I wrote this blog post a while back called Solidifying What You Learn. And in it, I mention have you ever seen a Burger King next to a McDonald's or across the street or something? You're like,
yeah.
they're serving the same purpose, but right. people still go to both of them because they have a different take on the burger or whatever. There's right. actually even some place where they have three Starbucks on one corner in Seattle. Yeah. It's crazy. So like, and people go to all three of them, right? So just because it exists doesn't mean that you don't have an opportunity to share there.
Right. I love that. I think that's great advice.
Cool. So, Emma, it's been awesome chatting with you. Just to wrap us up, what would you give people as a call to action, something that they can do to either improve themselves personally or professionally?
Okay. I would encourage people to be open to feedback and also to actively ask for feedback. I am a huge proponent of learning like about myself and how I work with others, especially now that I've switched into a new culture where people communicate differently. So if you're looking to improve, the best way to do that is to ask for feedback. What are the things that you're doing well and where can you improve? Because often we don't see these things about ourselves. So go find a colleague or even someone in your personal life and ask them for feedback, right? Like what areas can I improve upon? And, you know, make an effort to work on those things. And you'll see over time that, you know, your skills are getting better slowly but surely.
That's fantastic advice. Thank you so much for that. When we finish here, I'm going to ask you for feedback.
Oh, good.
Cool. Thank you so much, Emma. It's been awesome having you on here and chatting with you. I've wanted to have a chat with you for a while. So that's what this podcast is just.
Thank you for having me.
To chat with people.
Yeah, it was really a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. All right. And we'll see everybody next time. Goodbye.